Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to Weird Things. My name is Justin Robert Young, filling in for Andrew Main, who has ascended to heaven. Joining me, as always, is Brian Brushwood.
Man, that was a majestic sight, was it not? Like that extra flair of him turning into a robot as he ascended to heaven, that was a great moment.
Well, he was a robot who was also doing the robot, which is another thing, is that, you know, he was kind of doing the dance that goes along with it. Filling in a more vocal role, as he did last week, it is our producer, Bryce Nashcom Castillo. Bryce?
Hi. I'm glad to be back.
All right. Hey, Bryce, I got to ask you, man.
Okay.
As we all know, before he defeated Werewolf Hitler,
sure,
robot Andrew Main ascended into heaven as a robot doing the robot, but he left behind him a series of scrolls. Have you seen any of these scrolls?
No.
Oh, wonderful.
I haven't read the scrolls this week.
Okay.
I'm a little behind on my reading.
All right, that's good, because I put the magic cloth over my head,
okay,
and I read the scrolls with the enchanted flashlight.
Sure.
And as you know, only I can interpret the scrolls.
Yeah.
So what was left behind to me? Let's start with a clubhouse that I think we should own.
Okay. I believe you did send me this, and I haven't looked at it yet.
Good.
Can you what is this,
Justin?
Yeah,
there's a real estate. You in the real estate game?
Oh yeah, man. I'm a real estate baron.
Are you?
I look for real estate, and I say, hey, real estate, you better get over here because I'm a baron with it.
Okay. Well, here's my question: is that would you be interested in a party-friendly estate right here in Austin, Texas? I've been trying to get you to Austin forever, right?
Yeah.
Very long time. Yeah, you're always trying to coax me out there, like, you know, but I think a party-friendly estate, now we're talking. Like, now I got something I can look forward to.
But can you define party-friendly for me? Like, does that mean...
No, don't. I'm in. Because you want to know what? I'm going to go the way I want to party. I want to move there, buy the place, and then if they're like, you can't do that. That ain't the way we describe party. Be like, sorry, bro. You just said party.
Check the news headlines.
Let me tease it up a little bit. It's lakefront property. It's right there on Lake Austin. You could get a. Remember where we went barefoot water skiing? You could kick out a boat on there, go all the way up to the dam and back.
Wow.
So that's great. That was some highfalutin living, man. I'm sure everybody who's out there is like famous and you know, they're all friends with the Undertaker. Like, I'll bet you that's like, that's where all the cool people in Austin live.
Right. Well, okay. Well, let me go a step farther. It's got a lighthouse. I mean, that seems
a lighthouse.
Curious, a bit there, extravagant.
Wait,
right?
What ships? Lighthouse,
granted, it's more of a theatrical conceit, right?
Sure.
You know, it's like, we can have
wait,
a lighthouse.
Can I Airbnb that?
Sure.
That lighthouse where it's like, hey, are you an eccentric octogenarian and want to fulfill your true destiny of being a crazy cold coot in a lighthouse? Come on down.
Well, let's go a step farther. What about, it's got a 1500 square foot, two bed, two bath place for you to live, but that's not the sweet part.
Right.
It's got a whole bunch of like party bungalows all around. Like
bungalows?
Have you ever been to a Renaissance fair?
Yeah.
Imagine a Renaissance fair, except for instead of everybody going to tents at the end, they went to individual tiny houses, all created in a Ren fair theme.
Okay, so trailers.
Is it a
trailer park?
No.
Are you describing a trailer?
Little houses. Little houses.
Renaissance houses. Come on. That's little houses is the preferred nomenclature.
Okay. All right. So you got Little House.
Okay. All right. Now I could tell I'm losing you here.
Just a little bit.
Occasionally you're going to want to have a party.
Ryan, you're only losing old fizzle tits Bryce over there because I'm the one who's ready to party. I'm going to buy this place sight unseen.
Okay. Well, tell me this. There's going to be, I assume, wherever it is you want to go, you want to be able to invite everybody over and we could do something like a live jury podcast or a live night attack or a live weird things. Let's say we have a scale model, exactly, precisely a duplicate of the Globe Theater where Shakespeare did all of his plays.
One-to-one?
It's like 1/2 to 1. It's like a 1/3 scale model, but it is exactly the Globe Theater.
Wow. Wow, that's extravagant.
Oh, you're back in now, aren't you? Oh, is that the trailer park? Like, that was weird. That was you 5 minutes ago. Now, all of a sudden, you get a little bit of the Bard up in this biatch, and you're all in your...
This sounds
you're
like
a different
camp.
Tune.
Okay, and the best part is
if Bryce has doth protested too much.
The best part is, okay, is it's built to expand. It's built to be something that we could grow into. That's why they've already sketched out and planned out a 25,000 square foot home and 40 boat slips.
Another home and a bunch of boat slips.
Yes, 25,000. That's 8 of my houses all ready to go. Like, just build it. That's all you got to do is build it.
Sure.
All right, Brian, you want to know what? Now I'm a little bummed because everything else you said I was totally into, but now I'm starting to think this is out of my price range.
Okay. Well, hold on.
Once you got to the 40 boat slips, I'm like, well, listen, I was down for the house and the party bungalows and the 1-for-1 Globe recreation. But now I'm starting to think this might be a little rich for my blood, the 40 boat slips.
Well, hold off. What if I explain to you the incredible value you'll get with pre-planned excavation for underground tunnels to get from one part to another?
It's so large, it is faster to go underground between buildings.
Are you in?
I mean, like, I'm still in, sure. I know now I'm going to need at least a roommate.
Home, a plot mate, because everybody's going to get their own home.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could have a million hangers-on, right? All of your college friends could come live in a tiny house in your little Renaissance-themed village that you've built that's perfect for a party pad. Uh-huh. Let's just say this is the kind of place where you could stage things like, I don't know, a recreation of the sinking of the Titanic where you get everybody out on a boat and then you sink the boat and you make everybody swim to shore.
Sure.
It might be the kind of place, like right here, close to downtown Austin, that you can make dreams come true, and it can be yours for only $45 million.
So for sale,
for sale. But here's my question to you guys:
$45 million, 65
for sale by
acres. Who? Oh,
Who do you think in Austin would be?
We just saw it on the thing.
Oh, was it?
I mean, there's only a few people in terms of big money eccentrics, you know, that are there, and chief among them is.
I just saw the face of Bryce as he figured out who it is.
Did he tell you about this personally? Is that how we found out this?
No. Full disclosure: a friend of the show, Richard Garriott DKU, is selling his estate for $45 million.
I missed it, Richard Garriott.
I got to visit there over the summer, and it's amazing. It's a rad space. A little bit rich for my blood. But
maybe a little bit,
but it's perfectly perfectly positioned, and I guess he just realized he doesn't want to throw a party so much. Of course, he's a dad now, so I'm sure that's what's going on.
Yeah, kids don't do parties.
So this is the one with the castle, right?
Yeah.
Among what you guys meant, here's the funniest thing about it is that I'm sure you didn't lead with castle because it might give it away. Because who else has a castle in Austin? But that is amazing. I mean, this is kind of a landmark thing for Austin, right? Because this is one of the weirdest, just gigantic compounds that has been in the city.
Well, and I think I've told this story before on Weird Things. I apologize for telling it again. But one of my first time of ever meeting Richard Garriott was, and keep in mind, like as a kid, I had Ultima 3 Exodus that I played all the way through, Ultima 4, Quest of the Avatar and all that stuff. Mm. And in all of the games, there was a character, Lord British, that was depicted just as a few pixels with a happy face and a scepter, jauntily moving back and forth. And no matter how you were in the game, you could always go back to Lord British and he would heal you back to 100, right? If you ever had the folly to attack him, he was indefeatable and you would be destroyed, right? And so when I was in college, and I didn't have a lot in my arsenal of magic stuff to do, but what I did know how to do pretty good was fire eating. And as we've talked about on Night Attack several times, you guys all know my kind of history of fire eating based story.
Sure.
The proto version of that.
The history of your fire eating story.
Goes back dozens of years. everything had to be Renaissance themed, and I had no money. I had no nothing. Mm-hmm. And my business partner at the time, Brad Henderson, was like, hey, why don't you just kind of whip up like a loincloth three and you could be like a wild man of Borneo.
Okay.
And so I show up and I think I got paid maybe $150 for the gig, but it was my job to eat fire before the court. And of course, Richard Garriott is in full regalia. He looks like King Henry VIII. Mm-hmm. And I walk in and I have to walk up this corridor surrounded by all of his guests at this bacchanalia, type thing. And in my mind, I'm just a stick figure avatar moving up one pixel at a time to Lord British. And I'm like, I'm living my third grade dream. And then I performed for him to his amusement and so on. But since then he's become a fan of the show and we've all met him several times. But it's the end of an era. This is an amazing piece of property. He's got, one of the things that is curious about it is, the castle has a observatory that is detached from the rest of the house, by which I mean the whole house sits on its house thing, but then the observatory is physically detached. It has its own foundation separate from the house, but inside the house, surrounded by the house, so that as the house settles and shift, it will not knock any of the optics out of alignment.
Oh, for like observatory stuff.
Correct,
like
correct. For celestial viewing and stuff.
Oh, wow.
You kind of got to wonder whether or not the idea of somebody buying it, especially in Austin, even though, there is more tech money kind of moving to Austin, like that seems like rarer than maybe somebody saying like, hey, let's turn this into like a college or something. Or let's turn this into something that is a more permanent kind of like money making sort of thing. Like, I mean, like that would almost seem like it would be a great place for conventions or something, especially because it has like that place in video game history, right?
Yeah, I mean, you were describing it and it really did sound like a summer camp, like bungalows and main buildings and plenty of open space and boat launches, like that could be what this turns into.
Dude, it's the real deal and it's the end of an era. I suppose it's an indication that I think he had planned to have it get wilder and wilder, but then he got married and had a baby and mm-hmm. in unsurprising ways that changes, your priorities. And I think he's at a place now where he's just like, I'm fine with letting it go.
Very cool.
Jesus. I mean, the upkeep on that, like that's not just like, I bought this expensive place and now I have it. Like any homeowner will tell you that owning a home isn't just buying it. It is upkeeping it. And huge, I can only imagine what that is. I mean, holy
smokes.
Yeah,
dude, 69 acres nice. Minutes away from downtown.
Wow.
Did you say nice? 69?
Well, yeah. It's a funny number.
It is.
Okay. So is this what your next goal is?
Might be two or three rungs higher than where I'm able to get.
Couple
I mean,
years.
Unless
Couple
I team
years.
Up.
I mean,
with,
I don't know, man. You know him though. So it's like, all right,
I can get a
asking price is 45.
Price.
But it's like, all right, but what if I gave you $150,000 now, cash?
Yeah.
In a briefcase. Get him a good briefcase. Get him a Samsonite.
If I got together, I guess, 69 friends, and then we all went in together and created a commune. That 68 might be
friends.
68. Well, yeah. No, I could be the 69. Yeah. That's a good point. That's another thing.
I do like the idea that it'd be like you just invite him out to lunch or something like that, or coffee, and you just like get like $100,000 in a briefcase, and you're just like, all right, I know this is listed, but I'm just saying,
click,
we can make this deal right now. I'm just clicking up, and it's like $100,000 in a briefcase.
Wouldn't you like to go buy some iPads in cash right now instead of close a sale?
By the way, one of my favorite things ever happened this week. I sent out an email saying, hey guys, check out the latest episode of Modern Rogue. We test the theory that freezing locks makes them easy to shatter. Mm-hmm. And then I got an email back from Richard Garriott saying, look, number one, you guys got a bunch of stuff wrong. Number two, you have to have me on to fix it. And then I'm like, what? And then like all of a sudden it got way more interesting very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. We're gonna try to get Richard Garriott on the Modern Rogue, okay. Which would be amazing.
Very cool. Yeah.
I think that would be pretty good. So he was upset that you guys didn't freeze the locks right?
Well, a bunch of people were upset with that because they all had different theories. But
was it the liquid nitrogen thing?
Well, and that's the thing.
So the idea was that it was going to be household stuff.
Correct.
And then we ended up testing more than that because we used dry ice from a fire extinguisher.
Correct, correct.
And so at that point, we were kind of out of our original target.
That's one of the weird parts is that...
Feature creep. Tell Garriott knows feature creep.
Feature creep, yeah. No, exactly. Like there's a... look, our job is not to effectively destroy locks. Mm-hmm. Our job is to test the rumor that spraying Freon or dust cleaner or whatever will allow you to shatter a lock.
Stuff you have at home.
Correct,
already.
Correct, yeah. Right? And so... So maybe we'll revisit that. We'll see how that all looks. Richard Garriott and Ernie Klein are on my list of people who I want to have lunch with as much as I can before they get too famous to care about me. Uh-huh. Because Ernie Klein, you know, Ready Player One is going to come out this summer.
Yes.
This summer? Or?
No, I think it's next, right?
Later?
If it's this year, it would have
like
been
shooting now, right? So I don't think it's coming out this summer. We would have had that in the movie draft.
Yeah, you're
It'll
right.
Probably
you're right.
Next year, I think.
But regardless, like it's I am very aware movie, of like of like.
Listen, no, Ernie, you have to worry about because he might have a gigantic hit movie on his hands, right? Like I think Garriott's been like that dude went to space, like he came back and he still answers your emails. Like I think you're famous Richard Garriott can possibly get.
Fair enough. Fair
answered
enough.
Your email, your marketing email.
My marketing email.
So
and to be like, well, actually, okay, all right, well, yeah. We're good. Then I'll only
I'll
have
tell you
lunch.
What you don't have to worry about, Brian, and that is people going to patreon.com/weirdthings to support us. Thank you to everybody that makes sure that we remain a consistent show in your life. Despite the fact that hashtag where's Andrew is still a thing, we are efforting to find him. One day we will, but until then, you can make sure that you go ahead and support us. Again, that is patreon.com/weirdthings, where you also get access to After Things, our more business and entrepreneurial focused after show.
And you get it early. You get it
Early.
Before it goes out live to the public.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Little girls. Now I'm going to... sorry, that was a bit of an opening. little girls, this story maybe affected me a little bit more than you guys.
Sure.
Mainly because I have
eight girls
of the age. So you all know my daughter, Josie, right? So I want you to picture, plus or minus... They actually don't know how old this little girl is, but give or take Josie's age, right?
Sure.
Local authorities in northern India rescued a girl after she was living comfortably with blank in the jungle for years.
With monkeys? Is this or snakes? Was she living with snakes?
snakes. Living comfortably snakes. With snakes.
Or goblins? Like, I'm just trying to hit the bases.
Goblins
I'm trying
are...
to find...
woodcutters alerted police after first spotting the young girl running with blank in a remote nature preserve about 8 weeks ago, reports say.
Well, I know, like, cheetahs and snakes do run, sure, in a way.
Okay.
Ah, feel the rush of the thundering snake herd.
They said the girl was naked and very comfortable in the company of blank. When they tried to rescue the girl, they were chased away by the blank. Police officer Dinesh Tripathi told AP Thursday.
All right, so India, right? They got them wolves in India.
Yeah, do they? This sounds like a Raised by Wolves story, but I don't think that they're.
Are there wolves in India?
Hold on. Hold on, I'm gonna go to Google and type. They got them wolves.
Got them wolves in India? Question mark. Actually, put two question marks.
All right, here we go. They got
them wolves.
Indian wolf
in India.
Canis lupus pallipes is a subspecies of gray wolf that ranges from Israel to the. End of this Google description.
And Tripathi says rescuing the girl was not an easy task for the officer. When he called the girl, the blank attacked him, but he was able to rescue the girl, Tripathi said. He sped away with her in his police car while the blank gave chase. Immediately after, she was rushed to a hospital in New Delhi where doctors say she had begun to shed feral traits she acquired from her primal pals and was, quote, becoming human, end quote. Believed to be around age 10, reports say the young girl was naked and unable to speak when they found her in January. Once she was placed into hospital care, she was said to be running on her arms and legs like an animal and eating off the floor, DK Singh, chief medical superintendent of the government-run hospital, told AP.
Like, so if they were chased after the police car, right, it's got to be something that's probably a little faster, maybe a quadruped, possibly, but...
Was running on all fours, so that would...
From the chats, yeah. We got to be cows, elephants, monkeys, cats, sharks, antelope? Monkeys, manatees, antelope.
Someone suggested cows? Could it be cows? But cows aren't, like, fair.
There's a lot of cows in India.
There are.
In India, they don't like killing them.
They're kind of vegan.
Like, cow almost kind of makes sense if it's India, but
is that racist? Question.
Is it? Hashtag join the conversation / Pepsi.
Yeah.
/ Pepsi. Sure. Man. Or like hyenas even. Or... Man, there's a lot.
Aren't we close? Has anybody gotten anything close?
Yes. So far, I've heard stuff very, very close. I want you guys to isolate in and lock in your final answer.
Can we ask? Right. Can we get a question?
It's gross if I say beavers.
No, it's great.
Is what color fur? Does this animal have fur?
It's a mammal.
It's a mammal. Okay. Oh.
Sloth.
I almost want to say something kind of like out there, like stray cats or something.
Stray cats. All right. Locked it in. Okay. Stray cats. Locked That's one in. Vote
I'm
for stray
say,
cats.
I'm going to go with that, and I'm going to say wild dogs.
Wild dogs.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
8-year-old girl found living with... monkeys alone in the forest 8 weeks later. The monkeys attacked the police officer who showed up and who ran away and then came back and rescued her and all that stuff. Which brings up really interesting stories in terms of, I mean, obviously this is, there's nothing great about this situation,
right?
You know, a girl growing up in very harsh circumstances, but
did they say how long she had been with the monkeys?
Forever, as far as they know. Like, wow. like she doesn't speak. She doesn't have English in
or
her,
Indian,
yeah,
probably.
Or Hindi. Hindi, yeah, yeah. There's something that linguists call the critical period. Are you guys familiar with this?
That's the point where, as you're an adolescent, your brain is more receptive to information,
correct,
especially language.
Yeah, that's why, as a matter of fact, Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State of the United States, has a very thick German accent. He has a brother who is just 2 or 3 years younger than him who has no discernible accent at all. And they linguists attribute this to the critical period, basically like, well, you know, he was Henry Kissinger was 15 when he came and his brother was 13. And that was enough for his brother to learn the language properly.
She seems so young. They say she's about 8.
Yeah, well, they think 8 to 12. It's a wide range, oh, right?
Sure, so
about 10. But there have been, when I was in college, there was a linguistics course that I took that there have been, and again, these are not the things you would intentionally set up, but they occur in the wild. They're what economists call a natural experiment. There was a case of abuse where a girl had been forbidden to encounter anybody else except for her dad or whatever, who locked her in a shed and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And she was young enough, or she was right at the critical period, and language just full on just didn't quite take it. It was a tragic circumstance, but it sounds like this girl hopefully is young enough that she'll be able to learn language. Yeah. But I have since heard this is up for debate. In fact, just when I did Ice Cream Social, they were talking about how you can't learn piano after you're 40 years old. Like you're just too far past the critical period. Yeah. But I'm almost certain there's going to be some example, you know, counter to that.
Well, I bet even more so than language, right? Because language is something that we interface with constantly every day, reading, writing, listening and hearing. I almost bet the lifestyle changes would be something harder for her to kind of overcome, right? I mean, it sounded like she was kind of like eating a little more properly, but
it sounds like she was acting full on feral, but then when introduced to a different circumstance, there's what psychologists call social norms that we want to conform to. And as a matter of fact, the Freakonomics podcast has done a number of episodes on the UK's behavioral sciences unit, aka the nudge unit. And one of the things they figured out was that the most effective way to get the delinquent section of their tax offenders to cooperate mm-hmm. was to send them an email that basically just said two things. It said 98% of everybody pays their taxes on time. You are in the very small minority who have not yet paid your taxes on time. Yeah. Here's the form to
do that,
to take care of that. And out of everything, the pressure to be like the rest of our social group is so strong that it was one of the most effective things they've ever done.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
man, that's crazy. So I mean, like, I wonder like how you even come back from that, right? Like, is there like a protocol? Is there like some like dusty old manual of like, anyway, so day three is introduce her to dinner tables. Like, you know, like what is the step one on that?
Yeah, all of those cultural norms are things that we would consider outside of school learning, right? I mean, reading and writing are very typical classroom subjects, but like eating and using,
like eating on a schedule,
furniture.
Right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and obviously there are certain rhythms that animals kind of get into and everything. But it's amazing. Even watching, you know, all my friends kind of raise kids now, just realize that at such an early age, things that we just take for granted because we've always known them, they start because, you know, parents are raising their kids to do very certain specific things that fit into our culture.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I would. So looking back, so think back to your own 8th, 9th, 10th year. Like, of your entire memory, how much space would you estimate that occupies?
Third grade, right?
So let's take everything 3rd grade and before. How big a chunk of your total essence, your being, who you are, would you estimate that accounts for?
I mean, a handful of bits of information, a handful of data
of scattered
I remember, oh, this teacher, I remember liking this teacher, I remember this teacher always wore running shoes and that was weird,
right?
But
that's a very specific memory.
Well, they didn't match. She wore dresses and stuff. It was not a good look.
Don't be catty.
It was a 20-year call out. But yeah, very just small, very specific things that for some reason have stuck around, but no day-to-day things like now, right? I can kind of remember the past few days in detail, but like very specific flags.
Well, and so that's one of the things, the idea that the tabula rasa, the idea that we are a blank slate, and I'm thinking about this specifically because I just read Steven Pinker's book, The Blank Slate, where he proposes there are different theories of mind, and one of them is the idea that there's some real us that is not our physical bodies. That's like the think about Men in Black, the tiny man running the robot,
yeah,
you know, that looks in there, it turns out that there are inherent usness when we're born that we can't help. We have proclivities to do certain things. Some people are more angry than other people. So other people are more athletic than other people.
Nature.
Yeah, exactly. Nature, it's nature versus nurture, right? Yeah. And I think, I don't know, it's been really interesting raising three girls, and reading The Blank Slate really got me to kind of relax about the idea that, oh, everything I do is shaping them forever. And he says, basically, Steven Pinker says, no.
Part of them will inherently be a certain way regardless of how you raise them.
Correct, yeah. Right? And specifically, and that's not something to be disturbed by. That's something to celebrate. That's something to rejoice and find relaxation in. It's like, well, you know, that's who it is. That's who this person is. And specifically, he points out how much more a child's peer group matters than what their parents say.
Oh, sure.
And the example he gives is, he says that if you want to consider it, imagine that God picks you up, straps you into a ridiculous white and pink leisure suit, and plops you down in front of a meeting of the board of advisors, yeah, at your company. You would be embarrassed, humiliated, you would find it ridiculous, and you would be not interested at all in having done it.
Unless they were all wearing the same thing.
Yes, correct.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like because your peer group, like, that is not an appropriate way to dress in this peer group. And so, likewise, when parents try to do similar things from the kid's perspective, you know, make them wear certain things or make them adhere to random curfews or whatever, they don't appreciate it, because that's the parents. I mean, you're there. It's a weird thing, man, to just be all like, you're there to provide the genetic DNA, to provide food, shelter, clothing, and support, answer questions when they have them, and sure, that's about it. The rest they're going to figure out.
But I think part of it is because, well, I don't know necessarily how this is. Okay, this is a screwed up thing.
Go ahead.
A little bit of a story.
Yeah, come on, make it weird too. Make it personal.
When I was in middle school, I was not a super great student. Didn't do great. Didn't do a lot of homework. Would forge signatures and stuff. Whatever.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
My god. I wanted to see that keep going. Didn't do great. Not good at homework. Forged signatures. Committed fraud. Robbed a few banks.
Treason. Some treason.
Maybe some torture, kidnapping in prison. Whatever. Anyway, but yeah, it happens to all of us.
Odd to be young.
No, but I had a little bit of a rough middle school, and Over one holiday break, I had gotten just like blanket grounded. And there was a weird conversation with one of my parents, who said, and I quote, "I have to love you. I don't have to like you."
Wow.
Which is definitely a screwed up thing to say. But the point that I'm trying to get at is that you know your parents will love you.
Right.
And you don't necessarily need to look for acceptance from them as difficult compared to looking for acceptance from your peers and your contemporaries.
Right.
You know?
Well, and that's the weird part.
And obviously you weren't, right? Like, you know, you were doing things that you probably knew upset them.
Yeah. I mean, I turned it around.
I'm not putting you on trial here, Bryce. We're just exploring the thing that you brought up. Jesus.
No. But I think that feeds in a little bit to the topic of peer groups.
Yeah. Well, so in this case, we don't know her backstory, and she doesn't have any language. This little girl, like, her peer group was the monkeys, and she was doing okay enough. I would imagine.
Monkey around.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But here's my question is, considering how little of our minds is occupied with everything that happened from being 8 or 9 before, like,
yeah, do
you think she's damaged goods, or do you think that this is a case where, like, really her life begins now, and 4 years from now she'll barely remember?
Like, if what you are saying holds true, then yeah, it's good news because she is there is X amount of nature that will always just be a part of her, and all this learned behavior can be kind of unlearned because ultimately she's going to be who she is and she has an aptitude for it. Now, I think probably more specifically, there's going to be elements of like trust, right? And a steep cultural learning curve. But I think from everything you said, it would seem like there's more hope than if these formative years were like the programming that you have in your life. And now she has to deprogram everything before rewriting something new.
Yeah, that's one of the things I guess I'm optimistic, and I don't know if I'm Pollyanna on this or not, but like there have been experiments where people have raised chimpanzee babies right alongside their human babies, and one of the things they noticed is that human babies love sharing. Chimpanzee babies never ever give anything. Like they're very into taking.
Yeah.
In fact, it's suggested in some literature that's what sets humanity apart, is that we have a more inherently altruistic, community-based, tit for tat. We can remember this person did me right, this person did me wrong, that kind of thing.
Or maybe even a sense of ownership, right? Like, yeah. Why share something if it's not mine to own, it's mine to use or to...
Well, specifically, it seems like humanity is genuinely unique insofar as we have the ability to give something away, knowing delayed gratification. There is no other creature that can understand delaying gratification the way humanity can. Mm. Like, we can know, I'm going to give you these things, and then later I'm going to ask, and I'll get better, more of everything back. That's something that inherently chimpanzees and other great apes don't seem to understand.
Wow.
Yeah. So Andermain went to heaven, and he left behind some more scrolls.
Okay.
Question. We have talked about, you want to go to space? Justin, you want to go to space?
I mean, if I can't go to this party bungalow, then I mean, hell, I got to spend my time somehow, huh?
Bryce, you want to go to space?
Yeah, I'll go to space.
Okay. Define space for me. How spacey is space? Like, at what point, like on your deathbed, you say, I got to go to space. Like, does that mean you went to the moon? Does that mean you went to low Earth orbit? Does it mean that you orbited around the planet? Does it mean that you, Virgin Galactic, you know, go up, do a suborbital flight, experience some zero G? How important is that zero G part of the whole thing?
If it's me, because I know there is a level where we have defined space versus atmosphere.
Yeah.
For me, I would at least want to do an orbit around the planet.
An orbit around the planet. So you realize, like Spaceship One, Virgin Galactic, that's not around the planet. That's a rocket up. You get 5 minutes of weightlessness. You come back down. You see the curvature of the Earth. You see the blackness of space, and then you come back down.
I want to go all the way around.
So at least. So wow. So for
all right,
you,
wait, hold on.
What, is this unreasonable?
Like, so you're saying if somebody goes up and then down, and you're gonna be like, yeah, that's not space. Sorry, not space.
That's what I'm getting.
Go. Sorry,
that's what I'm getting.
Count.
I did not. That's not. I was saying what for me. I am not going to discredit any of the pioneers. Oh, God, Justin.
Out loud. But internally, it's going to be that 20%.
No, it's if I was doing space tourism, rather, if I was trying to embark upon a space journey, that's the level that I would like.
They're calling you in the chat. They're calling you a space snob. Bryce Castillo, colon space snob.
No. What is that? Suborbital?
Parabolic? Oh, no.
So for you, it's around the world or bust.
Or to the moon. Like around the world,
geez.
Or out.
Well, let's take all the easy things first. So
hipster spaceman Castillo.
I really like artisanal orbits.
Artisanal orbits.
Well, I mean, what do you guys think?
All right. Well, never mind. I see where you're going, but I think that we are talking about two different things. Brian is saying, what do you define going? I went to space. What is the lowest bar for which that fits? And I think that.
But I feel like we have there's a term or a defined point in the atmosphere or right outside the atmosphere that we consider space. Correct?
Yes. But let's talk about it in terms of aesthetically. What are the things you expect to experience and see when that define what it means to go to space?
I see.
Like I think we can all agree that looking up and seeing the blackness of the heavens above and looking down and seeing the curvature of the earth, to me, like that's a fairly like that's space.
The big thing, right? Weightlessness, Q, you know, all the things that you would really want to see in space.
Q from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, duh.
But we can replicate parts of those, like zero G specifically.
Exactly,
within
right?
the atmosphere.
So if you ride on a zero G, you know, the so-called vomit comet, yeah. right? Doing parabolic arcs where you experience 3G going up and then weightlessness going down at a time, is that a space experience? Is that going to space?
I mean, it's simulating space.
Okay, right. That. Okay.
Well, no, what do you think, Justin?
I agree. I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and join the cool kids club and you know push somebody's tray off the table because I'm with Bryce at the space snobs.
I'm not a space bully.
Okay,
I'm not a space bully.
Don't worry, Bryce. We'll talk about it at our next Around the Earth a space voyage, which is the only true space.
I want Bryce to have a t-shirt that just says hashtag I'm not a space bully. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Around the Earth or GTFO.
All right.
Okay.
So what if we took out one piece of that? What if we took out the weightlessness? What if you were full on all the way up? Let's say you took a rocket up. And you saw the blackness, you saw the heavens above, you saw all of the stars above. And when you looked at the earth, you saw the curvature of the earth. And there you were, just floating up there.
Okay.
But you couldn't float. There was no weightlessness.
Yeah, there's no weightlessness. But you
like
are
we're
you
trapped
are,
in it's basically like a really rad gravitron. Like that they have at like the county fairs, right?
Yeah.
Like, You're papoose to the wall, but you can see, you know, all the sights. You just can't jump up and down in weight.
Oh, you're stationary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But you have let's put it this way. The International Space Station is 200,000 feet up. You would be 100,000 feet up.
Okay.
So not in the grand scheme of things, not that different of you from the International Space Station.
Sure, sure.
But of course, they're moving so fast around the Earth that they're able to
simulate gravity.
No, they have no gravity because they're going so fast. You would be geostationary, so you would still feel the tug of the Earth beneath you. So you would still have gravity, but you would be suspended 3 to 5 times higher than a commercial airliner, all the way up. So it's black above you and the curvature of the Earth below.
Are you describing a space bungee cord, space bungee like drop, but in the opposite way at being tethered to Earth? Or
you know what, I didn't realize it, but I am because Worldview is a company that wants to take you to the stratosphere with a balloon. So picture this.
Wait, okay.
No giant 3G, 5G rocket takeoff, right? No orbiting the Earth, but instead you get in, you have a pleasant afternoon, you gently ascend to the edge of atmospheric space in a pressurized cabin. You get to see the curvature of the Earth. You get to see the black skies above. Mm-hmm. You get to smash your face up to the window of the rest of the universe, and then you know, whenever you're ready, you just, you know, gently come on back down. Does that count as a space adventure to you?
Oh, don't even ask him. Gee, come on.
All right, what about you, Justin?
And he's like, well, yeah, it's a space adventure, sure. And the next time I get drunk in a planetarium, I'm also Neil Armstrong. but he's also scattily putting out cigarettes while he's saying that.
So we talked last week about the cost of a trip to space through SpaceX, how cheap it might get, right?
Yeah.
And we recognize that it's very likely none of us will be able to afford a jaunt up into space unless we save exclusively for that one thing.
Yeah.
But a balloon, pretty cheap, right?
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, all right. So I think the biggest thing for me with this is, like, would I like to do it? Would I consider it as close to space as possible? Yes, I would love to do it. If anybody's listening to this and they believe that they would want effective communicators, we would be happy to help.
Your space street team.
However, except for Bryce, he's a snob. But the question then becomes what you would be willing to pay for. Right. Like how much you'd be willing to spend on it. And that's where I think I would draw the line. I will do any and everything. The flight, the vomit comet, whatever it is, if I can do it at a price that I am happy with, or I either had a tremendous amount of money and I could spend it on whatever I wanted, or it became cheap for us. Like, I'd be happy to do it. I would love doing it. I would it would be great. But I don't know if. Anything like I don't know if that would be enough to have me part with like a similar amount of money that I could get a like Blue Origin or Virgin Galactic like actual like in space weightlessness kind of thing.
Because I imagine like the whole launch procedure is not a function of what you get out of going through space. But it is a part of the experience of going to space.
Oh, wait. So for you, it's a negative that you don't get to experience an explosion happening behind you, forcing your body away from planet Earth at an uncomfortable acceleration.
Because I feel like if I did that, being able to like survive that or stomach that is kind of a small achievement in itself.
Okay, but that's going to easily be a relic. Right. Like I get there's going to get to a point where things getting to space become easier and easier. The technology, rocket technology becomes an easier like experience.
Well, and plus once reusable rockets through SpaceX get so cheap that we build a space elevator. Like uh-huh. like you wouldn't deny that taking a 2-day journey out of the Earth's gravity well on a space elevator. I mean, you're going to space, right?
Sure.
But to you, that's not the fun way.
I mean. It would be really cool to be in the. If there's a coolness, there's an.
Well, it's not really driving an automobile unless you hand crank it before you drive. Like that's the real experience.
My grandkids, Grandpa, you're so old fashioned. Your rocket booster launch. No, I think for right now, I think that's a novel part of the experience. But dude, I also recognize
I would be listening. Like I would get on that balloon. I'd be at the roast beef carving station the whole time, just like listening to the Pina Colada song, waiting for that slow ascent till I get to see space.
If you like Pina Coladas and see every curvature of
another
Earth.
Gin and tonic, sir, and like somebody will come by refill it. It'll be great.
If you like the vacuum of space, y'all. If you like giving a wide berth. I don't know.
So is there a price tag on this balloon?
Let me look. Cost of a ticket. Okay, now understand, right now, the cost to go, this is good. This is tangible. Okay. We know those people who are going on the moon trip on SpaceX, that was what, $40 million? Is that what they were paying?
I think it was actually less.
Really? Okay, we'll look that up.
Also, I don't know if that's publicly.
Yeah, I think there were estimates.
It's all gossip.
That we,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay, so
we got gossip word back to us.
That's fine. So let's go with gossip word.
Similar trips were between $81 million and $58 million and $175 million. So
okay.
2 to 3. Million digit range.
Okay, so
I will say that what we heard, and we can't confirm or deny anything, and I don't even remember the actual number. It was less than what I thought it was going to cost.
Correct. But also, I think it's safe to say, out of our price range. Full stop.
I think it was less than buying Lord British's estate.
Yeah. No, more. It was more than Lord British's estate.
It was in between. It was back and forth.
Okay. Yeah. What about this? What if, like, and keep in mind, you're born, you're living, you're going to die at some point. You got on your list of your bucket list of go to space.
Yeah.
What if I told you I can get you real close and you can have a good time? It'll be you and me and Justin Robert Young and, okay. and I'll bring
and the
Bonnie
Rose
and the
B
kids
station.
Just for screaming sure. to make it annoying. What if I told you we could do that for $75,000?
Holy crap.
Wait,
how,
we get
how
the balloon
does it sound
for $75K?
Now? What's that?
We get the whole thing?
No. You get the balloon up to the tip top of the stratosphere. Spend
what's
as long
the,
as you
wait,
want.
Wait, hold on, wait a minute. What's the capacity? Because we might book a con right now here on this show. Like,
yeah, you know what? It doesn't say how many people. I don't think. Let me take a look at that. But
what's the name of this company again?
It's Worldview, the company that wants to take you into the stratosphere with a balloon. Like $75,000. That's like okay. So I'm going to save for 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And then I got a seat, right?
Yeah. I mean, this sounds, I mean, $75,000.
It's the price that changes everything.
Yeah.
You're all like, well, I don't know. Now let me rethink whether I care about orbiting the Earth.
Well, that's what I was saying, man. Like, it's all right. So these guys are based out of Tucson.
Okay.
Yeah. If you go to worldview.space. And by the way, this is the first time I've ever encountered a .space domain in the wild, and I'm very happy to encounter it.
It's in your face.
Yeah, space in your face. Yeah, I got to tell you. Let me put it this way.
Okay.
Would you rather spend $30 million on actually going to space or spend $2 million or less than $1 million, spend $1 million on doing the Vomit Comet 5 or 6 times and taking 2 or 3 rides on this Worldview to the stratosphere?
Well, if it's an either or, like if we're in a, are we, oh man.
In one scenario, you get to keep $19 million and okay. You pretty much get what everybody else talks. When somebody says anything about space, you're like, yeah, that was my experience too. You know? And then, well,
I mean, like you get to bring friends, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, one is a ticket for one, the other, tell you what, if you want to impress a date.
Oh, my God. Can you know what? Think about this.
Okay.
Like, with that kind of budget, you can set up a Vive in a Vomit Comet and put on VR and be literally weightless encountering a VR simulation because they have, like, the Apollo 11 experience on VR and stuff.
Could actually meet Q.
Fair enough.
I mean, yeah, okay. The gross disparity in price tags.
That's the thing,
is
right?
The thing.
Is that because you're right. Like my gut instinct is like, well, that's not space. This is space or whatever. Yeah. But when you hear the price tag, you're like, I mean, it's pretty much space.
If I wasn't the first person to go that route, I would feel the social norm. I would feel better about the social norm.
Yeah.
Of getting the Android experience versus the iPhone space experience.
Wow. Sorry, Android. Shots fired, Androids. What about you, Justin?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, to me, it's like, would I do it? All of them. All, I would do it. Like, how would I order doing it? Or how would I prioritize doing it with, like, the available funds? Yeah, I would try to maximize value. I would try to find the best possible scenario where I could get the best bang for my buck.
Yeah.
So I'm into that. I mean, I like the idea that if it's $75K and then you get to bring, you know, 8 friends, right? Or defer that price, you know, mm-hmm. That's huge.
Is there any sort of estimated, like, first launch of this? Is this already operating?
Oh, I mean, they're already taking reservations. I mean, it's like they've got flight services. If you go to worldview.space, it's a real company and they're
where do you book it? Where is, I mean,
is I it, don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if that, because they also do like payload It seems like they have payload operations.
Look at that, though. Like, take a look at this picture. That next one right there. Scroll down. There we go. Like, I mean, that feels space enough to my mind, right? And granted, a lot of that, you know, the curvature of the Earth is because of a wide-angle lens and so on. But, I mean, I'd be down for that.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm in. I'm in, baby.
Yeah.
All right, what about this? What if you don't have... Okay, let's go one tier lower. Let's say you don't have $75,000.
I don't.
Okay. Let's say what you really want to do is just make a statement. You just want to get up and grab the attention of the planet for a few seconds to talk about your thing. Mm-hmm. Would you take a bunch of balloons and strap them to a lawn chair and send yourself up into the sky, like, as has already been proven
by that episode of Malcolm in the Middle?
Wait, did they do that?
Yeah.
Well, if they did, it was based on a real story. There was a guy that originally rose and then flew out to over the ocean and went way too high, had no way to get down, and was too scary. Mm-hmm. There's also been publicity stunts like GoPro things, Red Bull stuff, where I think that you have the right one
this
there.
This is Larry Walters.
Yeah, this is recently, this year, right? Just in the past few months?
No, this is 1982.
Cluster ballooning. I think that photo is a recent one.
Sure.
But at any rate, so there was a case where one guy was the first to do it and he had to be rescued because he went too high too fast. There have been other Red Bull stunts where they took people up and they were smarter about it. They had a backpack with a parachute in it, and then they just got high enough and the guy
jumped off and they're like, "Yay, give me wings, mate."
Yes, exactly. Red Bull gave them wings or whatever. But in this case, this is Daniel Boria. You can see if you can find it. Sure. The headline here says, "Jackass who risked lives flying a balloon chair fined $26,000. So, I mean, $75,000 is a bit expensive to go all the way to the edge of space. But if $26,000 and it's DIY...
That's only if you get caught, pigs.
Yeah, right. Right.
Well, them Duke boys finally came up with a Duke.
Yeah, there's a pretty good video of him going through the whole experience. He had GoPros over the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But apparently Canada was not a fan. They his balloon chair kind of floated into airspace.
Oh.
Like at some point he looked down and saw a commercial airliner. It was like, hey, look at that.
That's probably a problem.
That's yeah. No, it wasn't great. But again, legal repercussions aside, would you rather
sure
pay $75,000 to go to the edge of space or $26,000 in fines and DIY yourself right on up?
I would rather – no, this is a case where I would rather have a company that does it.
Oh, for you, the sticking point is not the money. For you, the point is personal responsibility
if I made this, I would feel really
– You want to be able to believe that somebody else is taking care
of
you.
Like in both scenarios where I'm free falling to Earth because something's gone wrong, I want to be mad at someone other than myself.
Or just also, you're relying – sure, that's $26,000 in fines. Right. That's not including all the time, effort, prep, materials that you have to get that thing up there. Mm-hmm. And then also you have the constant high grade terror of like, wait, did I do that math right? Like, am I sure? Am I absolutely positive that I'm going as high as I want to go or not going higher than that or going in a certain direction? Like, did I really check the wind today or was that yesterday or is the projection off? Like,
I don't know, man.
He spent $12,000 on helium alone outside of his fees.
That's okay. All right. So it's a little pricier than I expected.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, there's part of me that's just like, well, what's the world come to? If a man wants to float to the sky, why can't he float to the sky? Why is that a crime?
It's in protected airspace.
Can't own the sky?
Not in Trump's America.
Malcolm Reynolds told me that.
I don't know. I guess you go out to international waters and then you can ascend to the sky.
And then you can drown when you're done.
Well, I mean, you can, I don't know, maybe float down to America or... Yeah.
Float down to America?
Float down to America. That's what you do.
So when is the Modern Rogue episode of trying to build a deck, lawn chair that floats into the sky?
Oh, my God. We hadn't even considered that.
No.
But now I'm really interested.
No.
We were already talking about trying to put together like a zero-G combat thing on a vomit comet.
That is different than strapping a bunch of balloons to a lawn chair.
By the way, not in the right way from your perspective, because all I'm thinking is like, it's a lot cheaper to just get some helium and balloons in a lawn chair. We can get way on up.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you got
to get high. What's up, Blaze It?
That'll be your 420 episode.
You got any picks for us, Justin?
Sure. Yeah. What did I watch this weekend? The Americans. I'm watching The Americans. I love The Americans. The Americans' new season is happening. It's a shockingly competent spy thriller. If you're unaware of the premise, it is about a couple in suburban Washington, D.C. in the 80s. The only thing is that they are both Russian spies that were sent to America at a fairly early age, told to never speak Russian again, to have kids and raise a family so they can more effectively bring about counterintelligence to the Soviet Union. This is, I think, season 5 or 6, and we are now kind of getting to a little bit more of an advanced stage of the plot. So the story is a little bit tilting more toward the latter end of the Cold War and kind of what pressure that puts on our main characters. But it is great. It's always great. It's great this season. I love it.
Bryce, you got anything?
I rewatched. Apparently, I didn't even finish watching it the first time, but this is going to be my pick for Cord Killers. Also, is Preacher?
Preacher, you never finished it.
I never, not even the first episode.
Wow,
Preacher. So
how far along are you?
One episode in. I watched it this morning for Cord Killers today because it's now on Hulu.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, it's a trip, and I'm hoping I can get another episode in before we start Cord Killers, because I'm kind of at a loss with the very wide range of personalities that the first episode presents to you.
Well, the brilliance of the first episode of Preacher is that there's some over the top outrageous elements to this story that you can buy in a comic book, because you can get away with an awful lot in a comic book. But in order to make it work in a narrative piece of television fiction, they do a great job of inoculating you against the absurdness of some of the premises by stylistically changing stuff. You see that a lot in Legion, which is my pick, because I finished Legion today.
Oh yeah.
By adopting the trappings of over the top outrageous 1950s sci-fi, right in the first 5 minutes of Preacher, it sort of sets you in this like, blood, gore, splattering, jam on a wall, spaceships, space pods, mind control. Great. Now my palette is set. And then once you have that over-the-top palette set, then it's able to be like, and human drama, interaction, relationships, people you care about, and that kind of stuff.
But also like, this other woman who is on the chase there's a lot of layers going on that I'm interested to see where they go, because it does feel kind of disparate. Like the end of the episode kind of brings all of those things in the same place,
right?
I feel like. So I'm is this based off of a comic thing? I wasn't entirely sure.
Yep. It's an established comic property. And as a matter of fact, like in the comic, the guy, Jesse, has Jerry curls on there. And in fact, they give a little nod to it when one of the characters sees him and says like, "Oh, you changed your hair. Thank goodness," or something like that.
That's funny.
A little bit of a wink. But I in fact, you remember on Cord Killers, our end of the year special, I gave Preacher my best of the year. It was the best television show I saw in all of 2016.
That's right. Well,
yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's fantastic. I'm super excited for season two. It is really kind of a treat because it's a very hard comic, I think, to adapt for television. It is one that can very easily, like, it's a comic that really, I mean, let's be fair. It's on AMC. It's a horror comic. It got greenlit because of The Walking Dead, right? Like, that's part of the reason why it exists. It would be very easy for AMC or anybody who did it to latch on to those elements that are popular right now and put this kind of very delicate, weird, amazing balance totally out of whack. And it is credit to not only the producers and writers, but also the executive producers like what's his butt?
Seth Rogen
and Goldberg, his producing partner, to make sure that, like, no, this has to kind of go in order when spoiler, it's not really a spoiler, but like what you watch in the first season is effectively a prequel to what we see in the comics. The comics is largely a story that takes place in many locations. This is really the story of a far more fleshed out version of, you know, how all of our characters kind of got to be our characters a little bit more than we meet them in the comics. So it's exceptional. It has my favorite scene in all of television last year, which I don't even want to get close to spoiling, but it takes place in a church.
Oh, is this the communications issue?
Yes. Don't spoil anything.
It's great. It's great.
It's one of the greatest things ever. And, you know, I can't recommend it enough for how weird and amazing it is and how much, I mean, like, really Preacher and I'm glad you brought up Legion, because, you know, those are shows that in an era of peak television where television wanted to become long form movies, right? Legion and Preacher are kind of both, it's not like that they're any less than that ideal, but they're certainly, hey, look, we're television. We're going to take the ability that, like, you know, we can just randomly do something for one scene of one episode, and that's rad. And it can just be that. And it doesn't have to feed into anything else. It can kind of largely kind of feed into our larger story, but it's very avant-garde. It's very experimental and it's very exciting. Both those shows very much have you know, become, in my mind, an exciting part of my television viewing habits.
Yeah, and more on that line. My pick is Legion, which I'm sure I made before, but I just finished it this morning. And what I adored about Legion is that the thing that made it engaging at the beginning was how floaty and ethereal everything felt, and you felt constantly akimbo, like you're having a hard time figuring out what's real, what does this mean, which of these are visions, which of these are pieces of reality, and yet the last three episodes very much bring everything to concrete terms. You spend some time, some floatiness, and you get to that point where, well, I suspect this might get annoying because I don't really know what's going on. And then right around the time you feel that, there is a construct. I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but basically the main character talks to another version of himself in his mind, and the two of them break down with an actual chalkboard. Hey, what do we know? And of course, this is him talking himself through a difficult situation, but it also is a 5-minute concrete primer for everybody at home saying, these are the things that are true in this show. These are the rules that are going to follow. Now we have to solve this problem in order to save the day at the end. And it's great when it explodes into the Ethereum, it's great when it collapses into the concrete. It's just wonderful. Aesthetically, the direction is amazing. The acting is amazing. Special effects budget, maybe they'll have more dollars next year. But outside of that, you know, they do an admirable job.
Yeah, there are some like, whoa, Jesus, like, you know, kind of special effects moments. But there's a lot that are like, oh, wow, that's really cool. Like they very often kind of get the most out of what they're doing. But they're telling a very complex story. And I think I said it here prior, but you know, whenever you do psychic stories, especially where people are fighting each other psychically or battling each other psychically, it really is very often just two people squinting at each other until somebody falls down, right? And maybe maybe there's some crazy stuff happening around them in CG, but that's pretty much it. This is a faithful, exciting exploration of 70s era psychedelic X-Men.
Yes.
And if that excites you, that is done right on a level that you have never seen before, then man, are you going to be excited for this.
Well, I almost wish that it was a couple of episodes longer. There aren't many shows that I think should be longer, but I think those last 2.5 episodes are really like, hey, we have to like do stuff now, and very almost too packed with exposition and solving things and putting things in their place. I really loved how floaty the beginning was.
Yeah.
And I almost felt like it was like a faucet turning on how much they needed to cover within that own.
I was story. Okay with it. I felt like, to me, it felt like a rubber band being snapped, where it's just like, okay, I'm trusting you. We're going to get somewhere. And the last 2 or 3 episodes, there are like, yes, and these are the rules, and this is the world, and this is the challenge, and go. And then I'm like, yes. And so I'm super pumped for next season, for sure.
It's just, it almost felt like so much of that abstract storytelling was gone, or I didn't get as many questions out of the end, especially knowing that we'll probably get another season of this.
I liked the fact that they didn't end on a big cliffhanger. Like this could, you know, and oftentimes this is what people have to do with the first season.
They did end on a cliffhanger.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, the good guys were all okay and the bad guy got away, but that could have been the entire story.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to debate it because to debate it is to explain more of the plot, which I don't want people to have to hear from us. But
on a similar vein, the one thing I really enjoyed about Legion is that, save for one very specific moment, it really was not a connected universe anything.
Correct.
And the one point that I had an issue is there's a point where two people are talking and they're like, hey, this is the bad guy. You know the bad guy? Long story, but yeah. That was one moment where I was like, oh, well, okay. You could have like told me a little bit more about him. But I generally enjoyed that there wasn't all sorts of like winks and nods or overt winks and nods to references.
So one of the things that I dug, and this is a very postmodern thing, where it's like, the protagonist, and this is not a spoiler, is that, you know, is somebody who is diagnosed as being schizophrenic, right? Multiple personalities and so on, hearing voices and everything. As a result, I would imagine he sees the world in a very disjointed way. So as a result, when they flip styles wildly, you know, going from a Bollywood musical to a silent movie, 1920s era silent movie, I bought into all of that because it's like,
sure,
this is a construct that allows me to view this narrative in a disjointed way, just like the main character would or whatever. It's wonderful. Amazing, amazing. I'm very, very happy that I live in a world where Legion exists.
And I will say, to me, the acting story of that show is Aubrey Plaza. I think that she just kind of not only defined the show, but also redefined her career, which is something that I think, I don't know if anybody was asking for, but it happened, and I'm happy that it did.
Yeah. By the way, there's also a great moment, and again, I don't think this is talking out of school. There's a great moment where somebody is portrayed at some point as being clearly a very bad guy. And then, do you guys remember, it was a deleted scene in Austin Powers where, stay with me, where a henchman gets run over by a very slow moving rolly wheel truck.
The roller, yeah, the pavement right.
then,
roller. Yeah.
And then rather than just blowing them off like, oh, henchman died, instead they take this 5-minute side jag telling the story where they call the guy's wife and tell him, and then you find out the backstory of what he had been doing for charity at the church and all this stuff.
Sure. I know that moment in Legion.
Yes.
And it's really good because I forgot who that person was.
Exactly. They kind of do that in Legion, only non-comedically, and it's wonderful. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that show constantly keeps you off balance, and you don't quite know who everybody is. It's great. And also, same guy who does Fargo, right? And now Fargo season 3.
No kidding. I did not know that.
Oh. Yeah, Noah Hawley.
Noah Hawley. Yeah, dude, that's great.
That's why the daughter and mom from season 2 of Fargo are cast in Legion.
Oh,
brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, that's right. Oh my God, I never put that together. The mom looks so much cuter in Legion. She looks adorable.
Yeah. And the daughter looks great too. I did not recognize them until somebody told me that.
Wow. Awesome. Gentlemen, how's it been?
It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.